Welcome to another episode of the Blue Crew, a New York Rangers podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. I'm your host, Johnny Lazarus, with my good friend, Cody Franco. We don't have Avery Zaretsky for the intro today, and Cody's not in the interview with Greg Wyshynski today. So it's kind of a confusing episode, but that's just what the summer is. We're all kind of bouncing around, doing our different things. So
what's that show?
On Cody's behalf, but
What's that game where you like... Oh, it's musical chairs. That's what we played this.
Yeah, it's basically what it is for the podcast right now for the summer. But we did have a great interview with Greg Wyshynski from ESPN. Awesome time talking to him with Avery, not with Cody. So just clearing that up before we go any further. But
I'm here.
Yeah, Cody's here. So what's up? How was the weekend? You were in the Hamptons. I was out in Montauk in the Hamptons too.
It was good, bro.
What'd you get into?
So we got out Thursday night. Friday, dude, what did I... Oh my, when you hit an age, man, it's like you don't remember what you did last night. I'm a little hungover.
When you hit an age, when you have a certain amount of drink.
Probably both. So last night we went out to dinner with some friends at, we went to Boswick's on the Boswick's Chowder House. Yeah, it was great. Dude, their corn chowder was sick. But before we went out,
chowder in the summer?
Yeah, it was fire. Dude, well, they're known for like their chowders.
Were you eating outside?
No. We ate inside. It was like
okay. I was gonna say, if you had corn chowder in July,
No. That's crazy talk. But the reason I had that and some fire fish tacos. But dude, so right before, okay, I'm trying to do the right thing and I'm fucking flossing. Okay, right before like we went out to dinner, or whatever.
Can I confess something?
And, yeah,
I don't think I've ever flossed like in my life.
That's fine. Jackie like doesn't really floss that much either. Like from time
to
time, she will.
Is it that big of a thing? Like honestly, maybe we could even do a poll on like on how many people actually floss.
When I was a kid, my parents must have let me have like way too much candy, so I had like all these like fillings.
You're a cavity kid, weren't you?
I was a big cavity kid, and I don't get cavities anymore because I like take crazy care of my teeth. So like you know, I haven't had them in like, I don't know, 10 years, whatever. But basically, like, I have these fillings that, like, you know, from time to time might come out, whatever. So, dude, I'm fucking flossing, doing the right thing here. And I think the floss got stuck in between, like, my second to back left molar, like, in between, like, the actual filling and the part of the tooth that was there. And I, like, ripped it up and literally a tiny piece of either my filling or my tooth came out. I don't really know which one it was, to be honest. I think it was my tooth. But I don't know. So I have this little like hook. So I like texted my dentist yesterday, like as if the world was ending. And I was like, hey, can you see me? Like I'll come home. I'll come from the city and I'll come home tomorrow night. Like she's like, yeah, I could squeeze you in at 7 p.m. So I'm fucking hauling ass there tomorrow and hopefully get that shit situated.
You poor baby. Are you going to be okay?
Dude, honestly, I don't know, man. It was freaking me. It like ruined my whole mood yesterday. But then I got a few drinks in me and then I was like happy again.
All right, well, imagine missing your front four teeth for 5 years.
Yeah, but how many of your teeth can come out right now?
No, well, they don't come out now. I mean, unless something bad happens.
Do you have the screws in all your teeth?
Yeah. So these front four, I have two screws, like one here and one here.
Yeah.
And they're a bridge.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, hey.
They used to be able to come out. I had a flipper for like 5 years.
Yeah. Damn.
When you first joined the show, I still didn't have teeth, right?
You had like, you had teeth, but like then you didn't have teeth. You'd like smile and have no teeth one day. And then the next day you would have like teeth. Like, I don't know, dude. And you also like went to your dentist like 18 times because they kept falling out. So
yeah. Luckily they haven't in a while, knock on wood, but
yeah. Yeah. But, but it was good, dude. The weekend was good. Like it was good to get back out there because this was only my second time out there all summer, which is like unheard of for me. Cause you know, I'm out there every weekend.
It's the best.
So it was nice to get out there and just, especially when you go out Thursday night, like late Thursday. And then you could just, even if you're working Friday, you could like, yeah. Like I worked all day Friday, like a freaking dog, but still like, just like being there is better than not. Oh, that's what I did Friday. Friday, I went out to dinner to Blue Parrot. Have you been to Blue Parrot? It's fire.
I don't really go out for dinner when I'm there. I kind of just like, we always just cook at the house.
Ramen.
And go out.
Ramen. What? Nice. Like ramen? Like the $1 ramen noodles you put in your microwave.
No, we barbecue. Skirt steak. Always. Yeah. Right. Always skirt steak. Actually, what did I do for dinner? I had pizza for dinner on Friday.
Did you stay at your buddy's house? Who has the house there?
Yeah, so I bounced around. I stayed at my friend Holden's in East Hampton, and then I went to Montauk Saturday and stayed at my friend Eric's.
Our friend Holden.
Our friend Holden. You met Holden. Oh, yeah, you met Holden. That's right. But yeah, I stayed at Eric's in Montauk Saturday. And Montauk is just like.
Where'd you go?
I went to the Surf Lodge.
Why are you saying that like sad? Surf Lodge is fine.
I think it's so overrated, though. I think it's so overrated.
It's overrated until they have a sick artist. When they have
never been able to afford
the deck. Rufus DeSoul, dude, went there. And it,
I'm not old enough or rich enough to afford the deck, so I can't do the deck.
Yeah. Once I can do the deck. Jackie's parents, dude, for John Legend. John Legend had like 200 people go, and they fucking like just bought like 6 tickets and went.
You need to be so rich to be on the deck.
Yeah.
It's like $800 nice. Bucks. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So hopefully one day I can do the deck. But
all right, Surfer. You didn't go to Rush?
No. I don't think it's a thing anymore.
Is it not a thing? Dude, it was a thing when I was fucking going there. Maybe like
Steven Stockhouse Friday ago. Night.
Well, obviously talks the spot Friday. Yeah. Talkhouse is great.
My favorite place in the planet.
Dude, who played? Rubik's Cube? My squad?
Yeah, it was. Dude,
love Rubik's Cube.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of Hamptons talk, though. Maybe let's move on a little
bit. Okay.
Yeah. The only Ranger news, though, was really Keandre Miller signing, and I think that was last Monday, like the day the episode came out.
Yeah. And we called it. I mean, we knew it was going to be somewhere in the 375. We called
it. It wasn't unpredictable.
What?
What do you mean we called it? It was like it was so predictable.
No. I'm saying the actual contract being like 375 to like 4-ish. Like we knew that was going to happen, you know. And now the only order of business is Lafreniere, and it's a matter of, you know, being 2.5 or whatever they get him. But
I'm guessing 2.2. That's my guess.
2.2. You think that low? Yeah, maybe. Honestly, maybe. I mean, they need a little bit of dough to go into the season. My biggest question with this team right now is who is their number two right wing? Like, who is that? Because if you're putting Blake Wheeler on line three with Trocheck and Kreider, who is – dude, you're not put – like, they're not going to put fucking Gaudreau on line two or VC. That's going to be so unbalanced. So
it's Wheeler for me right now.
Yeah, on paper, yes, he's the second right wing, or even first because he's probably better than Kako. But, you know – I think they're going to probably do like – I just feel like they're going to do Kreider, Trocheck, Wheeler. It's too good not to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, if that's the case, but you want Hedl and, you know, Lafreniere and Kako to all get top 6 minutes, that's going to be line two, whatever Hedl's line is. So it's like, who's going to be his right wing? I have no idea, honestly.
Yeah. And this is the annoying part of summer where we just speculate for the next 7 weeks until training camp starts.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll have that same conversation every week going forward, but –
Yeah. Unless he's traded.
I don't know. I think he's going to sign within the next
couple
days.
He has to sign. Yeah. He has to sign.
I don't know what the holdup is, but he's not. I don't think he's going to hold out.
No, I don't think he's going to hold out. I mean, are they doing Traverse City?
Not, I mean, Lafreniere and.
No. I'm saying like the Rangers. Are the Rangers doing Traverse City?
I haven't heard anything about Traverse City. Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah,
they typically do, so I would assume they are, but I haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah, one thing I did want to talk about before we can kick it to our great interview with Greg that I wasn't a part of. So non-Rangers, but dude, Bedard, like I was. So the reason I'm bringing this up is because when I was out to dinner on Saturday, I was with two buddies who. You know, we're both hockey guys. One of them played where you played actually. Where was your first team? New Jersey or something?
The Rockets?
Rockets, yeah. So he played Rockets, my buddy. My buddy Paul, shout out to him. So we were talking, you know, we were talking about it and one of them loves Bedard. And you know, the amount of pressure that is kind of on that Chicago and the city of Chicago is kind of putting on this kid right now to automatically be the next like McDavid or Matthews is insane. So my question to you is, what do you think is truly a fair assessment of year one for him? Like in terms of points and production, like what would you say? So we all had this talk and I said like my guess was 57 points. I was like 57 points, I think would be a very, very solid first season. Something to build on, you know, whatever. Like Matthews had 40 goals year one.
That's exactly what I was just pulling up right now. Matthews stats.
Yeah, he had 40. No, I think he had 69 points or something like that year one. And McDavid had 45, but that was only because he only played 48 games. So then year two, he had 100. So obviously you can't compare him to McDavid, but I think a lot of people are looking at this kid to be like Matthews Kane-esque. And dude, it's a huge, huge, tall order for this guy coming into this city, who's like this 5'9" kid. Like, I see videos of him online, like making jokes, like, you know, with his friends and stuff. Like, I just couldn't even imagine. So what do you think is a fair assessment?
What was the, I'm before we even do that, what was like the prediction for Lafreniere before his rookie year? Like,
it wasn't the hype of Bedard, but
obviously
I think,
not.
Dude, but, I think it was like 50 points, really? And he got 21. So
yeah, I mean, I think people are kind of, the most common answer I'm seeing is like the 80 point range. Like, people think he's going to be a point
insane.
A game.
That's not happening.
But it's not, because he's going to get first line minutes and he's going to get first power play minutes. He's going to be the guy. He is. He's going to Chicago to be the guy already.
Sure, dude. But I don't know, man. Like, when Matthews, remind me, like when Matthews was drafted, was Marner on the team yet? And then Nylander was a year after?
Nylander was a year before.
Before. Okay. So
he's my age.
Yeah. So, I mean, they had like a little base there in Toronto. And, you know,
the Oilers
stunk though.
Marner might have been the year before. Marner was the year before Matthews.
Okay.
Marner was there.
Yeah. But the Oilers stunk. So it's like, you know, they obviously had guys in there, but I don't know, man. What?
The Oilers? Who are you talking about?
The Oilers. Yeah. The Oilers.
Who are you talking about?
Like McDavid. When McDavid got drafted, I'm saying they had a, like, you know, they weren't a good team, but they had a foundation of a couple of really good players. Like, dude, Chicago has no one really. I mean, they, like, it's going to be the Bedard show. And I don't know. I think saying this kid's going to get 80 points year one to me is just such an unfair assessment, because it's like, if he doesn't, people are going to start writing him off already. You know what I mean? Which
yes
is crazy.
And no. Yes and no.
Dude, they did it to Lafreniere year one. And it's like, I don't know.
No, they didn't do it year one, because year one was COVID and the whole season was just weird in general for Lafreniere, his rookie year. But also, he didn't, you know, like, Bedard's going to be getting 25 minutes ice time a night.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just different. Like, if you ask me a realistic expectation, I do think Bedard could put up 30. I think that's possible. I think he'll score 30 goals. Yeah.
I think that's fair. If I had to guess, my guess, because me and my boys were doing it, like, I said he was going to get 25 goals and, you know, 32 assists. Or, yeah, 32 assists. Was my guess.
So that's like what, 57?
57 points. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you said that before.
Yeah. And my buddy Paul said 65, and then my buddy Evan said 50s range.
I don't think it's so unrealistic to say 70 points. That's kind of what I'm going to go with.
But, and that's fine. But if he doesn't, do you think, like,
kid's fucking 18 years old? I think he's 17 right now.
I know. I just think they're putting so much pressure on him. Like, you know, like, you look at other situations and guys come in and there's a couple good players already there. Like, the Chicago situation is very unique. They have no one. I mean, they have, you know, Seth Jones, sure. Like, but they, like, offensive firepower. I mean, dude, they moved everybody. So it's like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be interesting. Did Domi re-sign there?
No, Domi went to where did Domi go? Toronto.
Toronto. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But their blue line's the biggest concern. Like, outside of Seth Jones, like, honestly, like, I don't really know many of the players on Chicago. Like, I don't know a lot of these guys.
They have, like, Sam Lafferty. Like, they have randoms, like Radish. And,
no,
like,
Lafferty was traded last year.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Dude,
their blue line
right
now is Seth Jones, Philip Roos. Their second pairing is Jarrett Tinordi, who we know as Rangers fans. Connor Murphy, and then the third pair says Wyatt Kaiser and Nikita Zaitsev.
Yeah, yikes, dude. I mean, we'll see, but yeah, it was just something I was curious about. But
no, I think it's a good argument, obviously, and it's, you know, we'll see when he steps foot in the NHL. Like, it's hard to say now, but I think, you know, there's expectation for a reason, right? Like, this kid, you know, lit up every league he's played in. Like, his shot's his biggest weapon, so that's why I think he can score.
Yeah,
in the NHL, it's not like it's his skating ability that's like so weak or whatever, but his ability to score and finish everywhere he's been is what's so impressive. So
yeah,
I'll say 70 points. But yeah, I mean, listen, I don't know if you want to talk much more. I know we have a couple shout outs to give.
Yeah. I want to give a shout out to my boy Atelier Carl. You guys should all follow him on Instagram.
He's rocking one of his hats right now.
Yeah. He
makes Arizona Coyotes hat sick.
Really, really cool. You know, custom hats, and he's making me a one of one dope Rangers hat. I don't want to reveal too much, but you know, Johnny saw the preview and it's gonna be sick. So shout out to the boy.
He does incredible work. I have two of his hats. I have a Ranger one behind me, but I'm not gonna go grab it right now. But this Coyote is one I wear it like almost every time we record. I love this hat so much. The hats with the rope were really what's so sick.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
And before we go into this interview with Greg Wyshynski, I do want to give a shout out to one of our sponsors, and that is Foreplay. Foreplay is a social app where you and your friend make your own profile. You try to pair up with another set of two. It's essentially a double dating app, but it's not really about the date. It's more about the experience. So it's about all that group chat banter that you love. Like, I know when I'm going on a double date, I text the girl that I'm seeing, and I text my buddy and the girl he's with, and we create that little camaraderie before going out, whether it's playing mini golf or going to a movie, going to dinner, getting drinks, all the above. But with Foreplay, you bring your best game to the date using the app, where you and your single buddies team up, make a shared profile, and go out with other pairs of single friends. And for me, like, I think it's always fun to go to a game. Like, I'm actually going on a double date to a Met game, I think, in the next 2 weeks. So that'll be a lot of fun. I'm also going to Chicago in like 2 weeks and probably going to go to Wrigley Field, which
dude, Wrigley rocks.
I need to find a date for that one. I've never been to Wrigley, so I'm really excited to go there. But I do love Chicago. Cody, let me ask you, do you have a good double date story? You're married. I feel like you got to go on double dates all the time.
Jackie's laughing in the background. do I have a good double date story? Jackie, do we have any good double date stories? Like, good in what sense?
I don't know. Like, where just you set up a buddy and it went really well and now it's successful. Like, I actually have a double date, I think, Tuesday night.
I did set up a buddy in college. So my buddy Jake, in my frat in college, I was our social chair, mm-hmm. and I would basically, my job was to convince girls to let us throw parties at their houses. And then, uh-huh. and then the cops would come and give them a sticker and, you know, everybody would get mad at me. It was great. So, so I convinced, this girl to like throw a party at her house. And, you know, that night my buddy Jake in my fraternity, like, started talking to her and they like really hit it off. And then the cops came 20 minutes into the party. Literally, they might have been the only two at the entire party who talked. Mm-hmm. And then the cops came, gave them a sticker. Everybody had to leave, and then they ended up going to my house. But dude, they ended up getting engaged, and their wedding is fucking next month. So, wow. So that's not really a double date story, but that's like a funny,
yeah,
just like, that's good stuff. Story.
So if you're interested in downloading the Foreplay app, go check out the description in the episode. If you're watching on YouTube, just look below. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, just check the episode description. There's a link in there. Click on it and sign up with a buddy, whether you are a male or a female. Sign up for Foreplay. It's a lot of fun. And listen, it's working for me because I have a double date coming up this Tuesday, and hopefully it goes pretty well. But Cody, I know you want to say one more thing. You got something on your mind?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know what a great double date idea is, dude? What? Going into like a golf simulator and just getting food and drinks there.
I'm so not a golf simulator guy.
But
Top Golf, I'll do.
You don't need to be. You don't need to be, because you just get hammered. They have like 5 iron.
Do it for me, though.
What? No, sims suck. No, they suck for sure. But no, they do. Because, dude, I just went last week and they don't even let you putt. I was like, what do you do?
Did you go with Avery?
No, I didn't go with Avery. I went with a couple of my boys. But the drinks and the food were great. And it was a great time.
Mm-hmm. I love Topgolf. Topgolf's a good one.
Yeah. But
I think that's going to wrap it up for the intro to this episode. We got a great interview with Greg Wyshynski, and we hope you guys enjoy it. This week on the Blue Crew, we are very happy to welcome on a new friend of mine, a friend of the show now, someone I spent the entire first round of the NHL playoffs with covering the Rangers and Devils, and then we got to hang out throughout the rest of the playoffs. But welcome to the show, senior NHL writer at ESPN, Greg Wyshynski. Wish, what's going on? How you doing?
It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I had a blast with you. It was
Chandelier Bar.
It was, yeah, at Chandelier Bar and other places. You know, it was one of those deals where, like, I wish it had gone longer. The playoffs a little bit, maybe a little mm-hmm. bit more drama. It felt long, but it felt like also short in a weird way. But yeah, we bumped into each other at Chandelier Bar. I think we bumped into each other at the official NHL party, I believe, in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
That was a thing too, where you got to see that. Was that your first official NHL party?
It was. That was my first losing virginity moment with the NHL media.
Did you like how all of the NHL.com people just sit at a large table by themselves the entire time? And then, like, the bloggy people sit at one table, and then the TV people sit at one table. The ex-players sit at one table. Like, it's very much high school cafeteria at all times at those things.
It is. I was just too focused on the open bar. I was just standing up there pretty much the whole time trying to get shit canned before going to elbow room.
As I've said to people, man, like when we've been making plans on the road, I'm like, we've got to stop by the NHL party. You know, we have very few perks in this life, and one of them is definitely to drink Gary's liquor. Like, drink as much of Gary's liquor as you can, and then you go off to the elbow room or wherever you need to go after that.
Exactly. We were very spoiled on that trip being in Florida and Vegas. But let's get into the nitty gritty here. So I saw you walking in the press box prior to Game 7, Rangers Devils at The Rock. You looked me in the eyes and you said Rangers money line. So my question for you is, what the hell?
I mean, obviously trying to fade the Devils for obvious reasons. No, man. I thought that the Devils that we saw in the beginning of that series was who we were going to see in Game 7, right? Like, I thought that they were going to lose their minds, lose their wits, kind of become flappable again towards the end of that series, and it didn't happen. I'm still kind of shocked by that result in particular, especially because of the way the goaltending went for them in that series. But they're all grossed up now, dude. They're like the fourth best, like highest odds to win the cup, which is insane to me. Like I said that to Tom Fitzgerald the other day, their GM. I'm like, Do you understand that, like, people think that you have the fourth best chance to win the Stanley Cup next year? And he's just like, don't fucking say that. You know,
they want to be underdogs, right? Like,
right. They want to be underdogs. I mean, I think they know that. I was trying to tell people that the whole thing about the Devils last season was like, there are teams that have windows to win, and then there's like the Devils who have like an open barn door to win. Like, Luke Hughes is a baby. Like, Nemish hasn't even played yet. Like, Jack just basically became a star. Like, they've got such a huge amount of runway in front of them that, I mean, I they'll get a few cracks at it, I think, before it's all said and done.
And that brings us to the Rangers, Avery.
Listen, I obviously grew up hating the Devils. I'm from Jersey. All my friends are Devils fans. It's like the toughest thing ever, especially, you know, when I was like in the prime years of my, you know, beginning of high school, and the Devils beat the Rangers in 2012. And it's just like one of those things. And now the rivalry's back and we look at, you know, the prospects, Jack Hughes, Kaapo Kakko. And it always seems to relate back with Devils fans to that draft and how the fans felt about it. Now, at the time, I remember, I think, I forget who it was, but someone had Kakko ranked number one and it kind of blew up and was like, oh, like, who are they going to draft? But the realists knew it was going to be Jack Hughes the whole time. So when it relates back to that draft party, I was there when the Rangers fans cheered and everybody talks about it. And they're like, oh, they cheered when the Rangers couldn't get Hughes. And then they got Kakko. And now, obviously, Jack Hughes is a superstar. Kakko, great player, but he's not Jack Hughes level. How do you feel about that whole situation, and why do the Devils fans still feel like the Rangers fans like had like a, they were, I don't even know. It just frustrates me that they think that the Rangers fans were like happy that Jack Hughes got picked over Kakko. I don't think it felt like that at all.
I think the Kakko number one was Chris Drury's mock draft, trying to swerve everybody and get the Devils to pick Kakko one.
Reverse psychology.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's any chance you get an opportunity in this rivalry to dunk on someone else, like, you're going to do it, right? Like, I mean, you know, the bottom line is that, for example, like, the Devils won three cups, as you well know, Avery, but they never beat the Rangers on the way to any of those cups. But the Rangers, quite famously, beat the Devils in the conference final. They get to the 94 Cup. So, I mean, those are the little things that everybody kind of remembers in the history of those two teams. But the thing you brought up, first of all, the Jack Hughes thing is just being able to dunk on the Rangers. But the thing you brought up is important earlier. The thing you brought up is important earlier, which is that you guys and me, we cover all sorts of fandoms in hockey. Like, we've got all these places. We talked about Fort Lauderdale before. We got a chance to see what a Panthers fan looks like up close, all that stuff. I try to tell people that you do not understand the nature of the New York metropolitan fandom until you talk to somebody like you and like me, who, depending on what happened the night before in the game, is going to affect your day the next day at school. Like, that's something nobody in Columbus understands that dynamic, right? Unless maybe it's an Ohio State, Michigan thing. But like, the very idea that a random regular season game between the Devils and the Rangers The result of that game will either mean you are having the best day the next day or the worst day the next day based on your friend group. It's something that I've found. I've tried to explain it to people around like the country when we talk about like how they grew up as hockey fans. It's extremely unique here. And I think it makes you like so much more dedicated to the cause when that's how you grew up, like living and dying with your team when they play their rivals. It's a very unique experience.
I know you like to ruffle feathers a lot, but do you feel like bias ever plays a factor into your articles? Like when you have to talk about the Rangers or whatnot, or you're staying by the book. Like, I'm sure it's hard to talk about the Rangers, but
it's not though. Like first of all, like when you do this for long enough, you kind of there's a certain numbing to your fandom that happens. I mean, I'm still a Devils fan. I still take my kid to Devils games. I kind of live vicariously through her. And I'm still happy when they win. Like in full disclosure, like I was thinking about the other day when I was thinking about them being like the fourth pick for the cup. Like in my job, I've never covered the Devils winning a cup. The closest I came was this series against the Kings. Right. And that was the first time I ever had to think about, okay, when I go on the ice with these guys to cover this cup celebration, I'm going to be on the ice with the New Jersey Devils when they win a Stanley Cup. How is that going to be? I don't know. I'll cross that bridge when I hopefully have to. But the bias actually goes, first of all, I came up at the right time as a writer. Like I came up as the blogs all started and everybody could kind of be honest for the most part with their fandom. And by that, I mean Americans, like all the people who are Leafs homers who are going to cry in the press box when they win the cup and they pretend they're not Leafs homers. Like they're still in denial. They're still in the closet as fans. But everybody that became like a blogger in the US, like the Flyers fans were Flyers fans, the Rangers fans were Rangers fans. I was a Devils fan. And as I got more going in my journalism career, like what am I going to do? Like there's probably a picture of me on the internet in a Devils jersey when I was 8. You know, like what am I going to do? Say that's not my background. So I just decided to be honest with it. And the one thing is it's gotten easier because sports like journalism has moved in that direction. Like Mina Kimes can go on the air and be like, I'm a Seahawks fan. And no one's like, you can't be on NFL television if you say you're a Seahawks fan. Yeah. Like they're Stephen like, Mina, we want to see more of you. Yeah, it's like it's not a big deal anymore. And then the other thing is that like if the bias ever crept in, it crept in the other way, which is to make sure I'm not being a homer for the Devils and to make sure that I am celebrating the Flyers and the Rangers and the Islanders and things like that. And there have been times when it's been pretty easy. Like when the Rangers were kicking ass, you know, in the middle of last decade, like it was really easy to write a fawning story about Lundqvist and or like when the Flyers were, you know, a fun team to watch for that like year, that was a really easy story to write too. I mean, like, the bias is always there. I'm always aware of it. And I'm always aware of the perception of my fandom affecting the writing. But my rule has always been like, judge the work. Like if you think the work is completely, you know, through devil's colored glasses, then maybe I need to check myself. But oftentimes I don't think it is. And I think that just the perception of it is that that's the case.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm like the opposite because, you know, I grew up a huge Rangers fan and people have recently dug up photos of me wearing an Islanders practice jersey when I used to play with the junior Islanders on Long Island. And now everyone's like, dude, which fucking team do you root for? And I'm like, all right, like, what am I supposed to do here? Yeah. So I'm like the exact opposite of that problem. I'm like, all the Ranger fans like hate me now because they think I'm an Islanders fan secretly and a Devils fan secretly. But I love these guys. Like, you know, we've openly talked about how much like I love Jack Hughes as a player. He's my favorite player in the NHL. Yeah. And if I do remember correctly, I don't remember the question, but wasn't it you that asked the question that led to him saying like, we just got whacked 2 games in a row. Like what the fuck? Like what? Like, I don't want to talk to you guys. Was that you that asked that?
Yeah, we got whacked 2 games in a row. So last thing I want to do is stand and talk in front of you guys.
Like, can you talk about just like, or the engagement with the players, you know, if you're rooting for, not rooting for it, but if you're a Devils fan and you're talking to Jack Hughes after a game and you're trying to keep it professional, but also, you know, creating that relationship with him and you get an answer like that. Like, we loved it. Like, I thought it was awesome that he's wearing his heart in his sleeve. Like, he's super honest with himself. But, you know, I think a lot of people can take that and, you know, bring it the wrong direction and say, like, why are you asking him these questions? Like, they're down to nothing. Like, you know, can you just talk about your experience in that and how you navigate asking these questions? Because some players are different. Yeah. Other players react that kind of way and other players just kind of do the robot answer.
Yeah, no, like, so the way I've always approached this job is that I do every interview with players, assuming I'm never talking to them again. And it's the benefit of not being a beast.
That's a crazy way to think.
That is nuts.
Yeah, it's the benefit. Like other guys, like people are always like, why don't these beat writers ask tough questions? It's because like they got to see that guy the next day, so they be the grand inquisitor and go after these guys on a daily basis because they'll never get anything out of them. And in fact, it's not like the locker room is like walled off. Like those guys all talk to each other. They know who's a good reporter and who's not. They know who's just trolling to make, you know, a column and who's actually like curious about the stuff they do. Like they know it. So from that aspect, I give beat writers all the leeway in the world. Me, I'm not one. So I literally just go in and assume I'm never talking to the person again. It's kind of puts me in the right mental space to just ask away, to not worry about relationships, not worry about anything. And if they don't want to answer it, they don't answer it. If they don't want to talk to me again, that's fine. There's like 500 people in the league I can talk to. In the case of someone like Jack, like I do see him more regularly than others. And the same thing with some of the Rangers and the Islanders, just because of where I live and the teams I cover. In that case, it's not thinking I'm never going to talk to him again. It's the other thing, which is to ask him the question that I think the fans want to know. And and that's really the crux of most of the things I ask in a dressing room. Because
that's the most important thing.
The TV people ask, what do you think of that goal? And this person, what do you think of that? And that's fine. We'll get that out of the way. I wait for like 8 questions to be asked. And then I'm going to ask my thing to really figure out what it is that I think people want to know. And if they want to answer it, they answer it. If they don't, they don't. And in Jack's case, Jack's funny. Because he doesn't talk a lot. Like there are times when the Devils media wants to talk to Jack. Jack's not there. He's not talking to the media that day. And he's the biggest star on the team. He can do that if he wants and not do that if he wants. It's fine. It's fine. Who cares? But after the game, he's going to talk. And so the brilliant thing about him is that when you get him, he is like straight up emo. Like he is hard on his sleeve. He is not there to give you a boilerplate quote about the goal he scored. He is going to tell you it's straight. And I hope he doesn't lose it. He's still young. He's still, you know, growing into the superstar mode where, you know, he gets recognized on the street and stuff like that. So I hope he doesn't lose that. But right now it's just like that question I asked him was full knowledge that he was going to come back with something that was going to be pretty remarkable. And he's at that age right now. When he's 27, maybe he's just like bucks in deep, whatever. But like right now you can ask him a question and get a good thing out of him.
I loved it. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah. I love your mentality on that. And I think what a lot of people don't understand about reporters, and especially in like the New York, New Jersey area, is that they like to ask the tough questions. You're always going to get that. My question is, do you believe that there's a privilege of being in there as a reporter? And do you think that I'm trying to think of the best way to say this? Like, do you think that players should always give you answers, or do you think that it's like one of those things where they don't owe you guys anything? Because there's a lot of reporters who do complain about that and feel like, you know, because I think there was a point in time last season where Igor didn't talk to reporters for a couple weeks. And there was a lot of backlash on that. And I think of it as one way is like they do in some ways have to give answers, but they don't owe anybody anything. They're out there doing their thing. Like, I don't think they owe anybody any quotes.
I think they owe us if they talk to us in the good times. You know, if you're going to come out and you're going to talk to us after a win and we're going to sing your praises and be like, Igor deserves the Vezina. And he's participating in that, knowing that's the transaction, like knowing we're there to you know, pour sunshine on him in a good time. Then there is a certain amount of like, well, if we're going to do that for you, then you should also be there in the bad times for us, so we can convey that to our audiences. So from that aspect, I do think that there's a certain amount of responsibility to talk to us if things are going bad, if you're going to talk to us when things are going good. I don't think there's always a responsibility to answer the question that we need, like. I mean, maybe you don't have a good answer. Maybe English isn't your first language. I never get too bent out of shape about that kind of thing, unless it's like a suspension, right? And you're there and we need to talk to you about it and we need to find out what went on because we only have one side of the story. A lot of times when we're asking those questions, it's for the totality of the story. It's for balance in our reporting. Like, we're trying to tell the full thing truthfully, and we need you to participate to do that. But you know, at the end of the day, it's like, look, there are always reporters that want to put themselves over, right? Like, there's always reporters that are going to ask a question to get an answer that they can put on Twitter or be in a video and whatever. And that's just how the nature of the beast is. Like, we're all craven celebrity chasers. That's fine. It's how journalism works sometimes. But for the most part, like, we're asking questions that we know that the fans care about, because we're fans for the most part. So when Igor goes 2 weeks and he's playing like garbage, like, there's probably a lot of Ranger fans that are like, hey, what's up with Igor? And so when we ask about that, there's going to be some fans that are like, oh, I'm glad someone asked him about that. And there's other fans that are like, now he's going to play even worse because you're making him feel terrible because you're the media. And so it's not, sometimes you can't win, but at the end of the day, it's just kind of like your job is to write a truthful story, write a complete story, and also interrogate the things that we think our audience wants to know.
I also do think, to that point, like, there are a lot of times where if a player is not saying something, like, that's saying something, you know what I mean? Like, if they're not going to talk to the media, like, it just goes to show their mentality on winning and losing and where they're at. Like, you know, I think Igor got a little bit of a negative connotation around him this year because of, you know, that 2-3 week span where he wouldn't talk to media. Like, and that's something that players have to live with if that's how they're going to act. Like, you know, I think the guys could, you know, you can go, what were you gonna say?
No, I was going to say that the thing I just popped into my head was the Jamie Benn situation in the Dallas series.
Right? Oh, my God. That's Vegas. The prime example.
Yeah, it's the prime example. And in that case, like, me and other reporters, like, really took him to task for not being available after the game. And like,
he's
and
the captain,
having his
too.
Teammates. What?
He's the captain. Sorry, also, like,
yeah, he's a captain. He's the captain. Right. Exactly. So he's the captain. He didn't talk after the game. And where we really had a problem with it was, like, he did this, he took a 5-minute major in the first 2 minutes of the game, changed the complexion of the whole game. His team loses a big game on home ice. And as a captain, you should probably talk. But beyond that, you're letting your teammates answer for you. Like, we're not out there asking Tyler Seguin what he thinks of the situation if Jamie Benn's answering it for himself. But then the next morning, to the surprise of many, because there weren't a lot of reporters there, he came out at like 10 o'clock in the morning and did a press conference. And so that, again, like, to go back to your question, Avery, like, sometimes we kill these guys for not talking. Sometimes it's probably because they're super emotional and they need to kind of collect themselves. And if you need a day, like, tell their PR guy, I'm going to talk tomorrow morning. And that might make it okay, because we know inherently these guys are human. They screw up and we just need to get the story at some point. And maybe it's not, it doesn't need to be in the locker room, you know, 5 minutes after the game, even if that's going to give you the best incendiary quote.
Yeah. And I think Ben was probably a better example too. Like, in hockey, it's the golden rule. Like, you never blame the goalie. So it's hard to look at Igor and kind of sit back and blame him. But the Jamie Benn thing's a great example. Like, if you're the captain, like, 99% of the time, the captain has to talk to the media. And especially when you basically cost your team the game, it was nuts. But it's funny, you mentioned reporters like wanting to get quotes on Twitter and whatnot. How about that Flyer situation? That's one where you don't want to end up on Twitter.
It's tough, man, because you know those conversations are always happening, like, behind the scenes about the PR staff, the social staff, all talking about the people in the locker room and who's good and who's bad. In that case, it's kind of amazing. I was just talking to somebody about that the other day, about the idea that we are in 2023. We are, what, now 3-4 years into Zoom meeting culture, and you still have people that don't know how to mute themselves. we're 2 years removed from the guy on CNN showing his crank on the Zoom call or whatever it was, right? Like, we should know by now what not to do, and yet. That's what happened on the Flyers call.
Well, also that situation too, like, that question, I know they said, like, oh, how many times are you gonna fucking ask that question, whatever, but that's like a question to give like a positive light on the Flyers. Like, that's the funniest part about it, is like, here's this guy who signed in Philly that can say all these positive things about Philly, and now it's ruined because of the comments behind the scenes, you know.
And the really shitty part was the thing that they said was, why does she always have to ask this fucking question? And like, God, you know, hard enough for a woman to feel welcome in a press box, hard enough for a woman to feel welcome in a locker room, to now be called out on a Zoom call because you asked a benign question to a free agent signee. Oh my God. It's just like, it's so deleterious to what any social team or PR team should be doing. And I'm happy that Keith Jones came out with that statement to like smack it back a little bit.
Yeah, he's awesome. And I do want to transition a little bit into, you know, the current Metropolitan Division and what's going on right now this summer. And I actually
have a question from my cousin who happens to be a huge fan of yours, Greg. I think I told you this when we first met, but my cousin Jason sent me this question. The Metro division seems like a buzzsaw every year, and the latest is that Erik Karlsson is likely joining. Is that a cyclical situation, or do you think it will always be competitive because of the high profile markets in the division?
I would imagine it's cyclical. I mean, yeah, you've got high profile markets, but you always have ebbs and flows. I mean, the Devils were in the basement for like 7 years, and the Rangers wandered the wilderness for like the first decade of the century. Right. And then, you know, like the Flyers are in a down cycle now when Ovi and Sid leave, who even knows? I mean, obviously the Penguins have Kyle Dubas there to rebuild the dynasty or whatever, but like, they'll probably cycle down for a little bit too. So, you know, there's always going to be like four teams that are really good, and then four teams that are kind of like, you know, rebuilding a little bit. Maybe three teams rebuilding, one team that's the Islanders that's always just kind of like there. It's cyclical in the sense that there's always going to be opportunity to move up. I don't think to me, the Atlantic was the bigger, you know, nut to crack for those teams that have been bubbling under, because you had Boston, Toronto, and Tampa good for a good like 6-7 year stretch, it feels like. So it's cyclical, and I think the next sea change will be obviously when Ovi and Sid retire, which hopefully isn't anytime soon. I'm getting real nostalgic about those guys every time I see them. I'm like, my God, we're like losing our time watching these guys that, you know, in many ways salvage the league after the canceled season. But the Karlsson thing's weird. I mean, I think it'll obviously help them. I mean, he's a tremendous player. I still don't know like what bounty the Penguins can give up that would convince San Jose to give him to them over Carolina, that has picks and prospects and the whole thing. And then on the Carolina front, you know, the other team that's allegedly chasing him, like, I covered the Sharks when Karlsson and Burns were there, and they weren't great, and the relationship wasn't all that great. I mean, as far as like those guys trying to take ice time from each other. So I don't know. The both of those teams don't make a ton of sense to me, but the Penguins will probably be the team that ends up with him from everything we've heard.
That's like one of those situations where either team is not great, but you'd probably rather him go to the Penguins if you're a Rangers or Devils fan. But speaking of the Rangers, I feel like we have to go back to that. This is a Rangers podcast, and I know you're a Devils fan, but we still got to talk about it. You seem pretty tapped in on the Tarasenko and Patrick Kane situations. What do you think is going to happen there? And it did come out that Patrick Kane is going to wait until the regular season to sign, but Tarasenko has been pretty quiet. It seemed like he was locked into Carolina, and now it's kind of came back to he's looking at other options. It seemed like he wanted to stay in New York, according to Larry Brooks. Where are we on that, and where are we also on Patrick Kane?
Yeah, I wouldn't put the Rangers out of the running for either of those guys. I mean, Kane, I'm the one who wrote about Kane and his plans this week, and it was interesting to see. It's such a unique free agency, right? Like, major surgery after, like, a month before free agency, and then, like, what's going to happen? I mean, he seems like he's going to just kind of go into the season and pick the team he thinks can give him the best chance to win, but we'll see how it plays out. It won't just be the Rangers. I think he clearly wanted to have the Rangers experience at the trade deadline last year, but I wouldn't put it out of the question that it could be someone like Dallas or Florida or someone else if they look like they're in tip-top shape that King could end up with. Tarasenko is a tricky one, because I think, like Tyler Bertuzzi, he had never been a UFA before. He entered the market thinking it was going to be one way. I think he got some bad advice, not from Paul Theofanos, his former agent, but from other people that maybe had him thinking he was going to get a contract or get a salary that just wasn't there for him under the flat cap with the teams that he wants to play for. And then, you know, he breaks with his agent. He goes to CAA, and then the whole process resets. So honestly, like, I think what Bertuzzi did is what Tarasenko should end up doing, which is to take as much as you can get on a 1-year deal with a good team, and then, you know, take another kick at the can next summer when the cap goes up. But it's possible he's looking for some sort of term and security and putting roots down someplace, which is a tough gig at this point in the NHL.
Adding Tarasenko, I think, to the Rangers roster right now, how much scarier does it make them? Because if you look at this roster right now, I don't think their ceiling is higher than maybe, you know, getting to the second round.
I mean, he's one of the better goal scorers available. I mean, I think that he's got a lot to offer. You know, I think the problem with Tarasenko will inherently always be his defense, which I think is atrophied even as he's gotten older and never was really a calling card. But if you're asking him to do what's in his skill set with regard to, you know, put the puck in the net, create some offense, be tough in the offensive zone, that's certainly an element they could use. I mean, look, man, the ceiling on the Rangers is how good they're playing entering the playoffs, and what their health looks like entering the playoffs. I think they're really good. Like I think they've got the potential to go further than where you think they're going to go, but it's just a matter of whether that the chemistry test gets passed. It's a matter of how far Igor can carry him, you know, and, you know, inherently because of the Rangers, it's probably also a matter of who they add at the trade deadline, which is, you know, an annual tradition.
But then it also, that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's also kind of like, though, I mean, the coaching thing was so bizarre to me because I always said if they were going to fire Gallant, then they should have a clear upgrade in mind, or a clear upgrade that they know is out there. And to me, it's like Laviolette at this point is kind of a journeyman coach. And I don't know if it's a situation where he comes into a team and in year one, they go berserk and they're great. Like it happens with some other coaches. It's one of the weirder things that's happened this offseason. Cause it does. And you guys probably agree. Like it does feel like they settled for a new coach, which is not the way you want it. You want to ever make it feel.
You and I were both on the Quenneville train right after game 7 in the first round. And then all that buzz, though, just died out of nowhere. Like there was so much talk about that meeting. And then all of a sudden now we don't hear anything about it.
Yeah. Well, that should tell you something, man. That should tell you that. I mean, I don't know this for sure. And none of the teams have talked about it openly. But the fact that everybody has a coach and none of them are named Joel Quenneville would be an indication to me that perhaps there was an understanding behind the scenes that Joel Quenneville maybe shouldn't get hired this summer. I don't know. Maybe the meeting was too late in the summer or some such. But all I know is that like he's the best coach out there. Nobody hired him despite needing a lot of teams needing a coach.
That's pretty much all I had on the Rangers front. Like I said, it seemed like you're pretty tapped in, so I just wanted to dive deep into that. But I do feel like that the Rangers went a little bit unorthodox to what they usually do, where, you know, they're usually after the big ticket free agents, but this time Chris Drury just went all out on signing depth guys. And it seems like they might be changing the guard in terms of like, hey, we don't need to go out and get the biggest ticket guy. We need to build from within. Like the problems that have stemmed through the past 3 or 4 years is that our top guys just haven't performed. Like we've gone out and got some big name guys like Tarasenko and Kane, but as good as they can do, it doesn't help when Zibanejad, Kreider, Panarin aren't showing up in the playoffs.
Yeah, Kreider. Panarin in particular. Yeah,
Kreider had a solid first round, I'd say.
But towards the end. But I don't think he was like that spectacular.
Bro, what?
Avery
goals in the first three games.
Avery means 5-on-5. He didn't show up. That's what Avery means.
Yeah. Well, that goes to another point where it's like the first two games the Rangers dominated the Devils, but in the aggregate, in the advanced statistics, it really was a lot closer than a lot of people thought. So it didn't make me feel like we had a safe lead at 2-0.
Yeah, but a lot of that though was because the Rangers had like put a hurt on them in the first period, and then the Devils kind of like were able to take over the game later on, and maybe make it look better than it did. They got rolled. I mean, they got run out of the arena in those first two games. And it's still, like I said earlier, like remarkable that they rallied to win the series. But I don't know. Like I you mentioned, no big ticket players. Like the smart thing that he did was get Wheeler, who I still think has a lot left to offer, even at his advanced age. But I mean, to get him for a song because he got bought out, that's the kind of thing teams should do more. Like Dallas with Duchesne, like that's an incredible signing. Like that guy's really good. And that is, he's a higher class of center than was available on the open market for sure before the buyout. So the Wheeler thing was really smart to get him in under your cap structure, and he's going to be a good addition, I think, for that team.
Yeah, I actually love that signing. And a lot of people think that was like the best signing of all the free agency in general.
Might have been. For that number, given their cap constraints and given like what he can bring to the table still, I think without question, it's like one of my top five favorite signings.
Mm-hmm. And Greg, my last question, just to wrap things up here, Avery, do you have one more?
I'm good.
You're all good. We're at that point in the summer. Let's spark some conversation. What is your Metropolitan Division predictions for this year? Is there like one sleeper team that can make the playoffs and then one team that might disappoint as far as expectations go?
Disappoint. Well, disappoint. I mean, depends. Are either the Penguins or Capitals missing the playoffs a disappointment after last season? Probably not, right?
I mean, I think it's the Rangers.
I think the Rangers are fine. I just don't know. I don't know what the Capitals' plan is right now. Like, I thought they had a ton of cap space and a lot of roster spots open, and they did more re-signing than I thought they'd do. Like, I thought there was a real opportunity to change the tone and tenor of that roster, and they're going with a rookie coach too. I'm not feeling the Capitals this year at all. And the team that might jump up, I mean, it would take a remarkable turnaround, but like Columbus, like we don't know what Babcock brings to Columbus. Like there's a very good chance that maybe all of a sudden with a little bit of structure and a, you know, a guy administering psychological torture behind the bench as he's wont to do, if they can get any kind of goaltending out of that group, maybe they make a little turn. Don't forget the thing that happened for Columbus last year that nobody talks about is like Zach Werenski played like almost no games. And that guy's a top 10 defenseman in this league. And they've built out their blue line pretty well with some of the additions like Provorov and things like that. Like they've got some good young talent up front.
You could say Severson and be biased. It's okay.
He's all right. I think I said this when he got traded, that Severson was never as bad as Devils fans made him out to be, and never as good as everybody else made him out to be. Like it's a really weird, like through the looking glass thing when people talk about Severson. But I would say Columbus might be the one that I'm kind of like side eyeing right now and saying what could this actually be this year if they find the right mix.
Yeah, because Fantilli in any other draft goes number one. I think he's going to be a superstar.
I love the kid. And the other thing too about him was that like he's like Captain Charisma. And he was Captain Charisma in some ways because Bedard is sort of a little bit not the same kind of guy, even though I think Bedard's gotten progressively funnier as you saw at the NHL Awards. But Fantilli gives Columbus something they've not had like ever, which is kind of like a real charismatic, swaggery franchise spokesman kind of deal. Like Nash was Nash is a nice guy, right? Like Nash is not the guy grabbing headlines with what he says. I think Fantilli could be that guy. And you put him in Line A and Gaudreau and was it Kent Johnson, the kid from Michigan? Like they've got some players there that certainly if they're all hitting, you know, at the right time could turn this thing around.
I think we want to thank you, Greg. And if there's anything you want to plug before we let you go, any big summer plans or anything you got going on?
writing away at ESPN. Got a couple of other things publishing before I take a little time off. I will be writing the lapsed fans guide for SummerSlam on ESPN.com along with my hockey writing duties. I also write wrestling, including like if I ever look back at my time at ESPN and be like, what are the highlights? I was like the first person to do an out of character interview with The Undertaker, which remains one of the coolest things I think I've ever done in my life. Like he started to do like more and more of them, and he had a TV show where he's himself. But like I was the first one to be like, oh, what was it like being in The Undertaker? and then on the Puck Soup Patreon, as everybody knows, I don't do Puck Soup, the hockey podcast anymore because of my ESPN responsibilities, but the Patreon has a ton of bonus content, and I do a few podcasts a month there, and also do some essays. I've just published one on Tom Cruise and the Mission Impossible movies, how every Mission Impossible movie syncs up with moments in Tom Cruise's life. And he's speaking to us through Ethan Hunt in ways that I didn't realize until this new one came out where he's fighting an algorithm. I'm like, oh, Tom Cruise is fighting an algorithm, is he? Okay, Tommy's getting us back to the box office, getting us away from Netflix, and he's fighting an algorithm. Let's go.
Yep.
All right, Greg, we want to thank you again so much. And, you know, hopefully we can get you back on during the season and we could revamp this Ranger Devil rivalry a little bit on the podcast and whatnot.
We should do a live show at one of these Devil Ranger games. That's my feeling on it.
I don't see that going over very well with how the game could be played because it's been Devils, all Devils so far. But
think big.
Yeah, we made that happen.
We'll do it.
Thanks, all Greg. Right, boys.
Major Take pessimist.
We want to thank our pal Greg Rosinski for coming on the show. Awesome to talk to him and just hear about his thoughts on the Metropolitan Division going into this season. Cody, I know you couldn't join us, but I'm sure
I asked so many good questions. I enjoyed the interview.
You texted us so many good talking points that we brought up.
So true. So true. But, did you ask Greg about his Devils fandom?
Yeah, we talked about that a lot. People that just listened heard it already, but yeah, we did.
That makes sense.
It's after the fact, but but we got some good guests, I think, lined up coming in the next few weeks. We're talking not to spoil, but we're talking to Boone Nieves, Brian Boyle, trying to get some former Rangers to come on and tell stories from their time playing in New York. So hopefully we can get those locked in, and I'm sure we'll have more media members coming on throughout the summer to talk about all the hypotheticals. But not much left to say, I think, for today's episode. Cody, you got any final thoughts?
No, that's really it. And LFGR, baby.